Chapter 22. And now without in the twilight behold Mr. Hoopdriver, his cheeks hot, his eye bright. His brain is in a tumult. The nervous, obsequious Hoopdriver, to whom I introduced you some days since, has undergone a wonderful change. Ever since he lost that spoor in Chichester, he has been tormented by the most horrible visions of the shameful insults that may be happening. The strangeness of new surroundings has been working to strip off the habitual servile from him. Here was moonlight rising over the memory of a red sunset, dark shadows and glowing orange lamps, beauty somewhere mysteriously wrapped away from him, tangible wrong in a brown suit and an unpleasant face, flouting him. Mr. Hoopdriver for the time was in the world of romance and knight-errantry, divinely forgetful of his social position or hers, forgetting too, for the time many of the wretched timidities that had tied him long since behind the counter in his proper place. He was angry and adventurous. It was all about him, this vivid drama he had fallen into, and it was eluding him. He was far too grimly in earnest to pick up that lost thread and make a play of it now. The man was living. He did not pose when he alighted at the coffee tavern even, nor when he made his hasty meal. As Bechamel crossed from the vicuna towards the esplanade, Hoopdriver, disappointed and exasperated, came hurrying round the corner from the Temperance Hotel. At the sight of Bechamel, his heart jumped, and the tension of his angry suspense exploded into, rather than gave place to, an excited activity of mind. They were at the vicuna, and she was there now alone. It was the occasion he sought. But he would give chance no chance against him. He went back round the corner, sat down on the seat, and watched Bechamel recede into the dimness up the esplanade, before he got up and walked into the hotel entrance. A lady cyclist in gray, he asked for, and followed boldly on the waiter's heels. The door of the dining room was opening, before he felt a qualm. And then suddenly he was nearly minded to turn, and run for it, and his features seemed to him to be convulsed. She turned with a start, and looked at him with something between terror and hope in her eyes. "Can I have a few words with you, alone?" said Mr. Hoopdriver, controlling his breath with difficulty. She hesitated, and then motioned the waiter to withdraw. Mr. Hoopdriver watched the door shut. He had intended to step out into the middle of the room, fold his arms and say, "You are in trouble. I am a friend. Trust me." Instead of which he stood panting, and then spoke with sudden familiarity, hastily, guiltily, "Look here. I don't know what the juice is up, but I think there's something wrong. Excuse my intruding if it isn't so. I'll do anything you like to help you out of the scrape if you're in one. That's my meaning, I believe. What can I do? I would do anything to help you." Her brow puckered, as she watched him make, with infinite emotion, this remarkable speech. "Why you?" she said. She was tumultuously weighing possibilities in her mind, and he had scarcely ceased, when as he had made a resolve. She stepped a pace forward. "Why, you are a gentleman," she said. "Yes," said Mr. Hoopdriver. "Can I trust you?" She did not wait for his assurance. I must leave this hotel at once. Come here." She took his arm, and led him to the window. "You can just see the gate. It is still open. Through that are our bicycles. Go down, get them out, and I will come down to you. Dare you? Get your bicycle out in the road? Both. Mine alone is no good. At once. Dare you? Which way? Go out by the front door and round. I will follow in 1 minute." "Right," said Mr. Hoopdriver, and went. He had to get those bicycles. Had he been told to go out and kill Bechamel, he would have done it. His head was a maelstrom now. He walked out of the hotel, along the front, and into the big, black-shadowed coachyard. He looked round. There were no bicycles visible. Then a man emerged from the dark, a short man in a short, black, shiny jacket. Hoopdriver was caught. He made no attempt to turn and run for it. I've been giving your machines a wipe over, sir, said the man, recognizing the suit, and touching his cap. Hoopdriver's intelligence now was a soaring eagle. He swooped on the situation at once. Tee, that's right, he said, and added, before the pause became marked, where is mine? I want to look at the chain. The man led him into an open shed, and went fumbling for a lantern. Hoopdriver moved the lady's machine out of his way to the door, and then laid hands on the man's machine, and wheeled it out of the shed into the yard. The gate stood open, and beyond was the pale road, and a clump of trees black in the twilight. He stooped and examined the chain with trembling fingers. How was it to be done? Something behind the gate seemed to flutter. The man must be got rid of anyhow. I say, said Hoopdriver, with an inspiration, can you get me a screwdriver? The man simply walked across the shed, opened and shut a box, and came up to the kneeling Hoopdriver with a screwdriver in his hand. Hoopdriver felt himself a lost man. He took the screwdriver with a tepid thanks, and incontinently had another inspiration. I say, he said again. Well? This is miles too big. The man lit the lantern, brought it up to Hoopdriver, and put it down on the ground. W want a smaller screwdriver? He said. Hoopdriver had his handkerchief out, and sneezed a prompt attitude. It is the orthodox thing, when you wish to avoid recognition. As small as you have, he said, out of his pocket handkerchief. I ain't got none smaller than that, said the hustler. Won't do, really, said Hoopdriver, still wallowing in his handkerchief. I'll see what they got in the house, if you like, sir, said the man. I if you would, said Hoopdriver. And as the man's heavily nailed boots went clattering down the yard, Hoopdriver stood up, took a noiseless step to the lady's machine, laid trembling hands on its handle and saddle, and prepared for a rush. The scullery door opened momentarily, and sent a beam of warm, yellow light up the road, shut again behind the man, and forthwith Hoopdriver rushed the machines towards the gate. A dark gray form came fluttering to meet him. Gee, give me this, she said, and bring yours. He passed the thing to her, touched her hand in the darkness, ran back, seized Betchamel's machine, and followed. The yellow light of the scullery door suddenly flashed upon the cobbles again. It was too late now, to do anything but escape. He heard the hustler shout behind him, and came into the road. She was up and dim already. He got into the saddle without a blunder. In a moment the hustler was in the gateway with a full-throated high. Sir, that ain't allowed. And Hoopdriver was overtaking the young lady in gray. For some moments the earth seemed alive with shouts of, stop 'em, and the shadows with ambuscades of police. The road swept round, and they were riding out of sight of the hotel, and behind dark hedges, side by side. She was weeping with excitement as he overtook her. Be brave, she said, brave. And he ceased to feel like a hunted thief. He looked over his shoulder and about him, and saw that they were already out of Bognor, for the Vicuna stands at the very westernmost extremity of the seafront and riding on a fair wide road. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.